Oh, it's going to be a feisty Big Blue kickoff live today on Giants.com. Meadows already yelling at our producer before the show starts. And he's happy to yell at you as well at 201-939-4513. I'm John Schmelke's Lance Meadow. That's the phone number for you, hashtag Giants Chat, if you want to ask some questions on Twitter. Obviously, last week was a lot of free agency talk. And some moves over the weekend is probably going to turn our attention back to the draft. But, Lance, I want to touch on the one free agent that we didn't have a chance to really talk much about last week because it wasn't made official until later on Friday. That's Patrick Omame, who comes over. He was a starting left guard for the Jaguars. He will come in and now compete for a starting job with the Giants this year. And here's what I'll say about Omame, because the one question I got from a fan on Twitter when I stated that he was a solid starter last year for Jacksonville, he goes, well, if he was a solid starter, why'd the Jaguars go and sign Andrew Norwell? And my answer was that Andrew Norwell is an exceptional starter and Omame is a solid starter. So there's obviously a big difference in the quality there. And what I saw from Omame looking him in on tape over the weekend was a couple things. One, he's an undrafted free agent, so maybe not the best athlete in the world. Usually when you don't profile athletically, you don't get drafted high. That's just the way it
goes. Norwell, by the way, undrafted as well.
Exactly. But what I saw from him that I liked is that you didn't see a lot of mental errors from him. And I think the stuff that I think kept DJ Fluker off the field a lot was the fact that he couldn't handle stunts and he often let free runners get to the quarterback. You can't have that at guard. If you have a rusher coming up the middle at guard, you can't have a free runner at the quarterback. You can't have it. I don't care how good you are against the run. Omame didn't have mistakes like that. And he was fine in pass protection. He struggled with some of the better athletes at defensive tackles like the Michael Brockers and the Aaron Donald. I watched the game against the Rams. When he was one-on-one with those guys, he struggled a little bit. But he's going to be solid. He'll do his job, and he'll be good competition for the likes of John Jerry, Brett Jones, Eric Flowers if he competes at guard, and whoever else might be in the mix at that position this year for the Giants.
Well, and he's a big presence. I mean, he certainly is somebody that hopefully will provide additional protection, and if he plays next to Nate Solder, if they choose to put him at left guard.
Which is where he played in Jacksonville.
Correct. They'll have hopefully a 1-2 punch on that side, which is an area they wanted to improve. You know, piggybacking off of your point, John, about somebody on Twitter asking you, well, why would the Jaguars look to upgrade if, you know, he should have been a suitable offensive lineman? I think any GM in this league is always looking to find ways to improve. It's the same thing, you know, if Case Keenum was solid for the Vikings, why did the Vikings go after Kirk Cousins when they could have just piggybacked off of what Case Keenum did?
Great point.
Helped him win 13 games. The argument is you're always looking, if you have the financial flexibility, to find somebody that may take you to the next level. I'll even bring another NBA example into the equation. The Golden State Warriors had Harrison Barnes. You're going to tell me they couldn't continue to win championships with Harrison Barnes and compete in the NBA Finals?
Kevin Durant's a little better.
They went after Kevin Durant. So, you know, and I'm not trying to say that Barnes and Kevin Durant with Omame and Norwell. The point is, you can never fault an executive for looking to improve, whether the disparity between the players is huge or small.
Exactly. So that's the last free agent. I think we touched on pretty much all the other moves at some point last week. If you want to get on them, Jonathan Stewart, Nate Solder, a couple of the defensive backs that are more depth guys, you can get in on that. Ogletree, Kareem Martin, you name it, give us a call. But obviously the news over the weekend came from the team on the other side of New York, the New York Jets, and they trade up in the draft. They move up from the sixth position to the third position with the Indianapolis Colts, sending the Colts obviously the sixth overall pick, so they swap the three and the six. The Colts also picking up two number two draft picks this year. It's the Jets draft pick in the second round and the Seahawks draft pick in the second round that the Jets acquired in the Sheldon Richardson trade last year, and then the Jets second round pick next year. So it's basically moved down three spots, and the Colts got to pick up three second-round picks in the trade. Some people said they thought the Jets might have overpaid a little bit. To me, I think that's probably about right, and I think where it would land when you would make a move like that, maybe it's a little bit much, but I thought that's about where a trade like that would land. And now the question is, does that at all affect what the Giants might do it to, or affect what the Giants could do it too if they decide to move the pick?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, a lot of people think they overpaid, first of all, John, before we get into what the Giants did. I mean, the fact that they didn't have to give up another first rounder, I actually think it was a really good deal for the Jets.
That was my opinion as well, because in the past, when a team moves up, and usually it's to one or two, so maybe it's only the three and that's why it's different, but you're right. When you move up for a quarterback in that top two area, usually you're giving up your next year's one.
Yeah, that's been the trend. So the fact that all they had to do was part ways with three second rounders, certainly valuable assets.
No question.
I'm not going to dismiss that, but if you were to tell me I move up three spots and I could keep my first rounders for the future, I think more often than not, most teams would pull the trigger on that type of trade.
And I think the reason for it, too, maybe they couldn't get quite as much, is that the Jets don't know who's going to be there at three. You know, it's not like the Redskins, when they traded up for Robert Griffin III, everyone knew Andrew Luck was going first. So the Redskins knew they were going to get Robert Griffin III when they picked second.
Or one of the two, even if it went reverse.
Correct. But I think everyone knew that Luck was going one that year. And last year, it kind of became known that the Rams were going to pick Jared Goff first. So when the Eagles traded up for number two, they knew, we love Carson Wentz. We're going to get Carson Wentz. Awesome. But at number three, there might be one quarterback left. There might be two quarterbacks left, or might be one quarterback off the board, might be two quarterbacks off the board. So the Jets, there is some matter of the unknown here,
which probably
lowered the asking price a little bit as well.
Well, and that was going to be the other side of the equation I think you have to bring up, because if you're the Jets, even if you're enamored with a quarterback, to your point, John, I mean, there's a chance the Browns and the Giants take a quarterback. So you better hope that your quarterback is low on the totem pole enough that he maybe falls to you at three, like maybe a Baker Mayfield, for example, which I don't think is a stretch, or maybe a Josh Allen or somebody like that.
Or maybe, while I'm sure they have a pecking order with their quarterbacks, maybe they have all the guys ranked high enough where they would be okay with getting any one of the three. Even if they don't get their top guy, maybe they'd be like, you know what, if we wind up with Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen or Josh Rosen or Darnold, whoever the third guy is on our list, we'd be okay with that.
Meaning there's not a lot of separation to them when they evaluated the quarterbacks. But if that's the case, my argument would be, now I know the counter is, well, it's still risky. Why move out of six then?
Well, because maybe you only like three of them.
Okay, I mean, I buy that. I'm just saying, if there's not a lot of separation, why even waste three second-round picks?
There's a chance that there might not be anybody sitting there at six.
There is. There is that chance, but I think in all likelihood, I'd be very surprised if somebody at another position is not taken off the board between one and five.
Well, one other player could be, but what if only one other player, a non-quarterback?
Well, if they like the top four, now you're going with the top three. If they like the top four, I think there's a pretty good chance by six they'll get one of those four.
Let me put it this way. I'm pretty sure we know the Browns are going to use a pick on a quarterback. And I think more than likely now the first pick in the draft, okay? You know the Colts were shopping their pick. So you know that a quarterback was going to get picked third, okay? Because if they didn't trade with the Jets, they probably would have traded with the Bills or somebody else. You're pretty sure the Broncos are picking a quarterback five.
So that's three.
So you're guaranteed to have three off the board. You're 99% sure the Browns aren't going to take a quarterback with both picks. Okay?
It's the Browns, now, but yes, I think we're fairly confident.
Is there not a chance that the Giants at two could either pick a quarterback or the Browns at four? What if they trade down from four to a team that needs a quarterback? So if the Jets stayed at six, there's a chance they get nobody. So that's why I think it's a good balance. There's a factor of not knowing what's going to happen, so the price isn't as high. But at the same time, staying at six provides a little bit too much rent, which is why I think it was a good trade for the Colts. I think it was a good trade for the Jets. And I think everybody goes home happy. And I would not be surprised if the Colts try to trade down again if there is a quarterback sitting there at six for a team like the Bills or a team like the Cardinals or a team like the Dolphins.
Because Indianapolis, you know, doesn't need a quarterback. At least it appears that way, depending on Andrew Luck's health. And you have Jacoby Brissett. Though I thought the Colts would have at least heavily considered Bradley Chubb, considering they can use an additional pass rusher. They also need offensive line help. If you're Indy, I agree with you. You want to maximize the value. You also don't want to dip too low where you're missing out on a player at a different position.
Here's the thing, and I think Ryan Ballard has come to the realization.
Chris Ballard, you mean.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Ryan Ballard is someone that I actually work with over at Skyview, who does our radio traffic, and which is why I came up with Ryan.
Could have went Jake Ballard, too, I thought.
That would have made more sense.
Yeah.
But I think he realizes that his roster right now is pretty shallow. There are not a lot of Colts being sent to the Pro Bowl. There are not a lot of Colts being considered for all pro teams. There are not a lot of Colts that a lot of people think are, frankly, high-end starters in the league, besides Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton. And that might be it.
Yeah, there's
no one on the defense. There's no one on the offensive line. I mean, who else do you love on that team? Their tight end had a decent year last year, sure, maybe him. But I think they need players, and they want to maximize players.
Yeah, and that's why it makes sense in that position when you don't have a great depth chart, too. I mean, forget just the starters, even the guys playing behind them. Though I was very surprised that Jonathan Hankins, just on a side note connected to that, was let go considering they're going to a 4-3 defense, John, with their new defensive coordinator. Yeah. And Jonathan Hankins started his career in a 4-3 scheme when he was here with the Giants, with Perry Fuel and Spags. So I really don't think the scheme was the biggest indicator as to why they parted ways with him. I think it was more financial, and perhaps they just want to go in a different direction and they want to bring in some young guys so that they don't need as much cap space, especially since they paid Andrew Luck.
Yeah, his contract, I didn't think was very
prohibitive. Wasn't overwhelming.
What was it, 3 years, $27 million?
Yeah, it was about $10 million a year. So, you know, maybe they're saying themselves they could use that money and address multiple areas.
Maybe.
But some people were throwing out that the rationale as to why they got rid of him was because of the change in the defensive scheme. And that, to me, makes absolutely no sense because, first of all, he moved to a 3-4 last season and now is going back to a 4-3. Why would he not be a fit for their defensive scheme?
Yeah, and last year,
he was productive.
Pro Football Focus had him ranked as their 23rd best defensive tackle, one of the best run defenders at the position in the league. So, according to them, he played well. Obviously, I'm not sitting there watching Colts tape. I'm not sure. But, apparently, according to Pro Football Focus, at least, he played well in that spot. So you're right. I was a little confused by that as well, especially given that they don't have a ton of cap issues. I think they have a lot of money to spend on.
Well, they gave Andrew Luck a big contract. Outside of that, though, they're not paying a
billion dollars. T.Y. Hilton probably has a pretty big deal.
All these other guys.
That's it, right?
Frank Gore they let go of. So all of their veterans that were, eating up some space, I don't really think are on the books anymore.
All right, so let's talk about how this affects the Giants now. I would imagine that this makes it more, I always thought it was more likely anyway, but to me at least, and I'm sure you disagree because I saw a tweet from you yesterday, but I think it's even more likely now than it was before, even though I thought it was going to happen anyway. I think the Browns would be very, very, very leery of waiting until the fourth spot now to get their quarterback. I think they're probably going to, if not definitely going to take one at one, which means the Giants will probably have one quarterback off the board when they pick at two. But now their pick got really valuable, I think, Lance. And I always made the argument, it didn't matter to me what the Browns did at one. The Giants draft pick still had value to teams. Because if there's a quarterback a team likes, even if the Browns don't pick that guy, they can still trade up. But this is why the Giants pick at two is more valuable now. When the Colts are picking at three, you knew they weren't going to take the quarterback. Or at least you were 99% sure they weren't. Now with the Jets at three, the Broncos sitting there at five, if you want to get up and get your quarterback, you have to go to two. Or theoretically, you can go to the Browns at four, but then you're still missing out on two quarterbacks.
You're still taking a risk.
So the Giants at two is like the spot if you need a quarterback and you're definitely sold on a guy that you think will be there at two, or if you wait until draft day you know is there at two, that's the spot to move up to. So I think the Giants really hold a lot of power now, given they're the one team that has their pick up, that could have their pick up for auction, that will get you ahead of the Jets that pick third, who you know are going to pick a quarterback.
Well, because it's a game of leverage right now
in
terms of can you move ahead of the team that you thought had an edge on you to grab a quarterback. I don't disagree with anything you laid out, but I still go back to, and I tweeted this out a few days ago, Dave Gettleman, when he spoke at the Combine, and he was asked about, what would it take for you to move out of the number two spot? And he said, listen, if it's an offer I can't refuse, I'm certainly going to consider it, but he also said the number two pick is something that you think is valuable enough that you could potentially walk away with a Hall of Famer or somebody that could pan out for the next 10, 15 years. If Gettleman, regardless of what's going on around with the quarterback situation, if he looks at number two and he says there are two to three players that I believe can be Hall of Fame caliber players, can be impactful players, game changers that are going to be with the franchise for a decade or so, no matter what anybody else is offering you, John, you still need to heavily consider utilizing that pick on a player at that point.
I agree. And this is why I'm going to make the argument I'm about to make. If the Bills call me, I say, no, thank you, sir. If the Cardinals call me, if the Dolphins call me, I say, no, thank you, sir. There's one team that I'd really be willing to trade with. Now, if the other team shows up with four first-round picks or something,
well,
you have
course,
the conversation.
Yes. I mean, under those circumstances.
And even three first-round picks, you have the conversation.
You certainly
okay?
have to consider
no
that.
Question.
Yeah.
But the team I want to trade with are the Denver Broncos.
So they're, five. You're
they're
talking
sitting
about.
There at number five. They might want to get back ahead of the Jets where they were before if there's a specific quarterback that John Elway wants. And if you go down to five, Lance, you have four selections before the Giants. You are very positive at that point that three of those four picks will be quarterbacks. there will be one pick that will not be a quarterback. So to your point, and this is happens to be my opinion of the draft class as well. If you have 2 to 3 players that you think could be Hall of Fame caliber players, let's just say, for sake of argument, you're looking at Quentin Nelson, Saquon Barkley, and Bradley Chubb. Just as an example. Even if you only believe there's two, Nelson and Barkley, you are guaranteed or near guaranteed that you're getting one of those two guys at 5, plus you're picking up extra picks down the road. That, to me, is such a sweet spot. If the Giants don't have a quarterback, they have circled at 2, you're still getting Nelson or Barkley or Chubb.
Chances are good, at least.
Yeah. I mean, well, you're getting one of the three,
well,
for sure.
I have a funny feeling that somebody moved up and is not taking a quarterback.
I think you're – really stupid.
I really think somebody is throwing a curveball out here.
Well, it has to be the Jets then.
I think it very
you
well
think
could
the Jets
be
the, traded three number two picks to pick a non-quarterback?
I think anything is possible at this point. I'll tell you why. The more and more I talk to individuals out there, the more and more I hear opinions all over the spectrum in terms of this quarterback class. Some people say this is a great quarterback class. Other people say they're not impressed with this quarterback class.
I agree with that.
And they think it's going to be just as a disappointment as that 2011 group or whatever it was where there were a lot
of quarterbacks.
It was 11.
11 was Locker and a couple other guys that didn't work out.
So every day it's a new thing from a variety of people. Now, that doesn't mean they're right, and that doesn't mean they're wrong. I mean, right now it's a matter of opinion, but it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, maybe the Jets in their mind are calculating that if the Browns and the Giants take a quarterback that, you know, maybe they're high on Quentin Nelson, maybe they're high on Barkley, maybe they're high on Chubb, and maybe they truly think that one of them is going to be around. Now, you're right. They could very well fall to them at 6.
Yeah.
I get that. But then again, listen, we've seen teams make choices out of panic. And this is the same organization that also took Hackenberg,
yeah,
okay?
But it's March,
and hasn't put him out there yet.
It's March 19th.
I understand that.
You don't
that.
Panic on March 19th.
But all,
it's a month
just,
and a half.
I get it. I just have a funny feeling. Every time we think we understand what the order is going to play out in the draft, somebody always throws a curveball.
And that's
so
true.
I'm holding that in the reserve here, that there's a possibility somebody may go out of line from the script, which means all of us trying to guess that you're going to have 2 or 3 of these options still left, it wouldn't surprise me if one of those options are taken off the board.
If I'm Woody Johnson, and I see that my general manager traded 3 second-round picks and my first-round pick for a running back, I would,
from a value standpoint,
fly back from London.
Yeah.
I would say, Mr. McCagnon,
put aside the politics.
Go home. You're finished.
What if
what
if they took Bradley Chubb, though? Would you still be as irritated?
Yes.
I'm just throwing it out there. Okay.
I would be.
No. I'm just using that as another example.
Only because at 6, I'm pretty confident I'm probably going to get one of those 3 or at least 4 top guys in the draft. And if you're going to give up that much in value and that many assets, you have to be trying to get the quote-unquote ultimate prize. And there's no bigger ultimate prize
I agree with you
than your franchise
I still go back to, I hope for their sake they're on the same page with a few options at quarterback,
right,
because there's a chance that the guy that they love could very well not even be there when they pick at 3. So,
that's
I mean,
true.
There's still a great deal of risk involved. And, you know, and here's the other thing about the number one pick, and I think you're referring to the tweet I sent out. If the Browns are high on one quarterback, they're using the number one pick on the quarterback. I mean, no matter who's moving up or down or behind them,
yeah,
you take the quarterback and you don't even hesitate. But we don't know what the Browns think of this quarterback class. If they're not that high on this quarterback class, and maybe they're in that Jets mindset that you're referring to, 3 or 4 of them are in the same ballpark, then I don't agree that number one is a lock for a quarterback.
To me, if the Browns believe one of these quarterbacks are worth selecting at pick number 4, that quarterback's also worth picking at selection number 1.
Or, well, I don't disagree with that, but you could also say, aren't I then maximizing my value by taking a different player at 1?
Well,
because then I'm really making sure that I get the quarterback and I'm getting somebody at a prime position. I mean,
get somebody else at a prime position at 4 as well.
Well, but you can, if you get Barkley at 1 and then you wind up getting Baker Mayfield at 4, so I got the top running back and one of the best quarterbacks perhaps in the class.
Yeah, but I think there's just as good of a chance you get Barkley as 4 as you get one of the quarterbacks at 4.
There is a chance. It's just that I could also see the Giants are the wild card here.
Right.
The Giants are not a lock to take a quarterback.
That's true. But they're also not a lock to take Barkley if they don't take a quarterback.
They're not. But I would say of all the if I'm Cleveland and I'm looking at the order right now, Giants, Jets, I'm saying to myself, okay, the Jets are likely to take a quarterback.
Yes.
Okay, but the Giants right now,
no, it's a wild card.
It's a guessing game.
I agree.
So if I don't care about my quarterback at one, chance I get my quarterback at four, risky maybe that I don't get Bradley Chubb or Saquon Barkley if I wait till four.
See, but I think when you go back to the point you made on the Jets were willing to take the chance because they were picking six, and they might not have gotten one at all. So that's why you move up to three, even though you don't know who you're going to get. The Browns have the opportunity to pick out the guy they love and pick him. And I would be hard to believe that they rated four different guys all the same way on their draft board.
I think figure maybe two have some separation.
Maybe, correct.
I think that's a fair assumption.
And I think to wait to four, I think, would be a little bit crazy. I want to throw one other thing out there before we get to your calls, because we've gotten a little bit long here, but I think it's a lot of good stuff to talk about. And well, first, would you trade down further than five if you're the Giants? If somebody comes with a reasonable offer? Like, let's say the Bills show up and say, we'll give you our two ones this year.
12 and 22.
Yeah, our later two this year and like a two next year. Would you say yes to that?
I'm only doing that if a guy at five is off the board. If my guy is off the board at five, I'd be willing to do that.
You mean at two?
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, if two. Then,
right.
I'm sorry, you threw out the Broncos initially.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Change it to the Bills. Yeah, if at two, I don't love who's still on the board, meaning Browns took the guy that I really wanted, mm-hmm. then I'd be more than comfortable moving down.
Okay.
But if there's a guy on the board that, or there's few choices still,
that you think could be that Hall of Fame guy,
I'm using the pick, and I'm not even hesitating.
I agree with you. And yeah. I want to throw one more thing out there, because I know fans, and the one question I've done a bunch of these interviews, I'm sure you've been asked too, are the Giants going to pick a quarterback at two? I'm going to read the Bills general manager. He had a great quote to
Brandon Bean.
Bean, yes, to Monday Morning Quarterback this morning. To Peter King. This is the quote. The truth, when asked if they were willing to trade up for a quarterback, he says, the truth, most of these quarterbacks I've only spent 15 minutes with. At the combine, each combine player can meet 15 minutes with the team. I haven't spent enough time to have an opinion about any of them yet, honestly. I actually sent a little note to our scouts yesterday. We got 6 weeks to get our board together. I am not there yet. Knowing if we can or will move up again, I want Sean to get to know all of them, their head coach Sean McDermott. We're just keeping an open mind where we're at. We've got the picks. We've got the draft capital. I'm not ready to pull the trigger.
I think that's a smart philosophy.
And that's my answer for you when it comes to the Giants. When you're selecting your franchise quarterback, it's so important to do these full day visits with these guys to see if they're the guy that you think you want being the leader in this building from a player perspective for 15 years. That is very important, especially for a franchise like the Giants in New York City. You need the right guy. And you're not going to learn about that from a scripted 15-minute interview at the Combine or talking with them briefly after their pro day. That's a 24-hour proposition. When these quarterbacks come in, Lance, they're here in the morning. They go through all their football work, boardwalk, talk to coaches, they go to dinner. They have a full day with these guys. And that is a big part of this process. And that's why, and I have no idea if the Jets called the Giants to see if they wanted to trade back to six the way they did with the Colts. In fact, I heard Manish Mehta and Paul Schwartz get asked that same question this morning on Sirius. Either of those guys knew whether or not that phone call was ever made, neither do I.
Or call the Browns, by the way, at 1-2.
Whatever the case might be. To me, even if the Giants got that call, I would bet, and I don't know this, I have no idea if this is true, but I would bet that Dave Gettleman would have said, I'm not willing to commit to that trade to move down 6 weeks before the draft. I don't know enough yet about these players, especially the quarterbacks, to know if I'm willing to move out of that two spot. At least that's what I think.
Well, and that's why I go back to, and I understand from a value standpoint it wouldn't add up, so then what makes the Jets think that they have a good grasp on all these quarterbacks if the rest of these teams are arguing they need more time to evaluate them?
I think I think part of it's a case of desperation. I think you're a general manager, you're sitting there, and frankly, I understand it from Mike McCagnan's perspective. You need a quarterback. He knows, frankly, that his job is going to rely on finding a quarterback. Even with the extensions they got, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the Jets ownership has said to them, we need you to find a quarterback. So he thinks his best chance of finding a quarterback is to move up to the three spot, and maybe with what he knows, he's comfortable enough, again, it's limited information at this point. I agree with you. But I think it's different when you're in the position to choose rather than having to get into the position to make that choice. There's a little more urgency to get into the position than there is to get out of a position you're already in. You know what I mean?
Well, and then from Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean's perspective, I mean, right now they're at 12 and 22 because they made the trade with the Bengals.
And they have 2 twos and 2 threes.
Correct. So they have options. They also signed A.J. McCarron. I know we had that conversation last week, and that doesn't mean that they should prevent themselves from trying to get another quarterback, but you at least have somebody on the books for the next 2 years.
Correct.
Who's young enough that you may want to groom. And, you know, the Bills also, I think compared to the Jets situation, you know, they're brand new. They're just rebuilding in terms of retooling and retweaking the roster. They're also trying to put their own stamp and new culture into the organization. McCagnan's been there for a little bit, so I think the time frame is a little bit different in terms of the mindset as well.
And by the way, Brandon Bean was with Dave Gettleman in Carolina.
Number two.
So don't be surprised if they have a little bit of a, you know, kumbaya in terms of how they want to handle getting to know these guys.
Which means a little bit more patience.
The judgment on the quarterback.
Yeah, that's fair.
Exactly. All right, let's get to your calls at 201-939-4513. I hope that kind of played out the options for you. Let's get to it. Let's go to Bob and Little Silver on line two first, Mr. Dominic. Bob, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great.
First off, I want to say that was a really good talk you guys just had then.
Well, thanks for tuning in.
We appreciate it.
Okay, so here's my thought. First of all, I believe the Giants should not make any kind of draft trade until after the Browns go first.
I agree with that
100%. Draft day trade.
I agree. That's fair.
Okay, that's good because I'm very interested in what both of you guys have to say about this. So then,
now Bob, real quick. There is a chance though that, you know how it works sometimes? These teams make it known who they're going to select in the first round. So if the Giants get some kind of intel a week before the draft that they know who the Browns are going to take, then maybe you could do something. But I agree with you. Until you know what the Browns are doing anything with that number two pick does involve a certain amount of risk.
Correct, yeah. So, again, I think everybody would agree, don't do anything until the Browns actually make their move.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So then, all right, so then you've got that taken care of. Now, what happens is everybody's calling the Giants. So if that's the case, I agree, and here's where, again, I want to hear from both of you about this. I agree with probably Denver is the best team to make the trade with because then you only go to five, okay, when you come down. But I've always heard, especially Paul, I've always heard him of more than anybody else about not going down below 10.
Yeah, that was me too.
Okay. All right. Now, so if we're going to agree that there's at least three, possibly four quarterbacks that would go in that first, say, 10 spots, okay? Well, then if that's the case, if you did entertain the trade with Buffalo, okay, then you would go down to 12. So what I'm saying is if you subtract the four quarterback picks, if the Giants do not want to take a quarterback, okay, that means the number 12 pick really essentially is a number, what,
eight pick.
Number nine?
Correct.
Okay. So it's not really a 12 in value, okay, if we are absolutely not interested in a quarterback. Would you guys agree with that?
I think that's fair, but I'll say this too, Bob. I think there's a fairly sharp drop-off after three or four players at the top of the draft. So I'm not sure there's
the quarterbacks, remember?
No, even if you take the quarterbacks out,
I'm
talking about just position players. I think once you get past Barkley, Chubb, Nelson, and then maybe Minkah Fitzpatrick and Denzel Ward. I kind of have them in that area too.
Maybe.
And, you know, I think there's a little bit of a drop-off after that group. Now, you'll still get a good player at 12. I'm not saying you won't, whether you get, you know, Roquan Smith or Tremaine Edmonds or, you know, Jair Alexander. Take your pick. There's a lot of guys, Mike McGlinchey. There's a lot of guys to choose from. But I don't think you're getting, as Lance pointed out before, that high probability Hall of Fame player that Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman talked about at the combine.
I agree with that. But like I said, if you want to, if you guys could agree that at least three, maybe four quarterbacks are in that top group, then what happens is, like I said, that 12 becomes a 9 or an 8. So would you feel pretty good about the value of that particular player at 9 or 8?
Well, but remember, that doesn't mean that you're getting the 8th best player in the draft or the 9th best player in the draft, Bob. I mean, you got to go back to, there may be a significant drop-off from the first running back to the second running back, from the first offensive line to the second offensive line. So to John's point, if John's saying, all right, you're at 12, the four quarterbacks are off the board, and now the top player at, what, four different other positions are off the board, are you content as a member of the Giants front office that you're then going to get maybe the second best player at one of those positions or the top player at a fifth different position who is not nearly as high on your board? I would not guarantee that just because 12 in your mind is equivalent to 8 or 9 minus the quarterbacks means that you're still getting the 8th or the 9th best player.
Bob,
that's my point.
It's all about how they have the players graded. Yeah. They might have, you know, let's just say they use their traditional or a very basic, you know, 10-point grading system. They might have only three or four players on their entire board with a grade of 9 or above, and they have 15 players with a grade between, you know, 7 and 8 or
so that's the
7
second
and
tier
9.
Then, though.
And that's exactly, and that's your second tier. So, do you want to get into that second tier of players or not? Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Giants believe there are 9 to 10 really good position players that are all about equal, and if that's the case, then they should move down to 12, but based on what I know about this draft class, I would say that's probably not the case.
Yeah, well, I agree. You guys are all making great points. And I guess the other thing is, well, we did get Odell, what, at 11, was it, when we picked him?
Yep.
But the other point is, though, that because let's say you do all that, and it's with the Bills, and you are at 12, and then again, like I said, I think we could agree that it's a value of an 8 or a 9 player. Okay, if that's the case, you still have the other caveat to this thing is you're still going to get those other picks that come along with this trade.
Of course.
So, you know, so now you got, you know, quite a few other picks, like the two number ones, the two number twos, things like that, wherever that would pan out. But you've got that to go along with it. So it's just really good food for thought because I hear everybody talking about, gee, well, you don't want to fall below 10. And in my mind, I don't think you essentially are falling below 10. Even though it's number 12, I just don't think if we're not interested in a quarterback, I think that's something to really think about.
Well, but thank you, Bob.
Appreciate the phone call. The goal is, though, you're not just looking at the 12th overall pick. You're looking at the entire package, what you would get out of that trade. And I'm going to bring up another trade, John, the RG3 Redskins-Rams trade. And I'm not looking at this from the RG3 perspective. People need to look at it from the Rams perspective because that's what the Giants would be. The Rams were in the number 2 spot in 2012. They traded out of number 2 and they wound up with 8 picks. They didn't get 8 picks from Washington. They turned it into 8 picks because they made other trades.
And by the way, in the initial package were 3 first-rounders in consecutive years.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So out of those 8 picks, okay, this is 2012. Coincidentally, 2 of the players are currently on the Giants, Alec Ogletree and Janoris Jenkins. And I'm not making the point that some of the players that were selected weren't good because I think Ogletree is entering the prime of his career. Jenkins is still a solid player.
Pro bowler.
And Michael Brockers is still on the Rams, who is a very good defensive lineman. Those are the 3 standouts of the 8. Now, if you walk away with 3 or 4 players out of the 8 that are productive, I'd say that's a good win. I mean, if you capitalize on half of them in today's draft, in today's era, that's at least a solid.
But how many are on the Rams?
That's my point here. One player, Michael Brockers, is currently on the Rams.
Great point.
And here's the other point to it, John. That was 2012, right? They did not have a winning season and make the playoffs until this past year. Now, if you make a trade like that, are you willing to wait 5 or 6 years before you start reaping the benefits of that? And by the way, you're reaping the benefits while a lot of those players are not currently on the roster. So I'm not saying that trading down is not good, because that's one example. Don't misinterpret my words, and I'm not making it sound like everybody that moved out of 2 is going to get those results. The point is, volume is great, but it's all about what you do with the volume, and you're not guaranteed to turn the volume into Hall of Fame caliber players because it gets back to your point, John. The lower you move down, the percentage points are against you that those players are going to pan out.
There's more risk.
Yeah.
The more you move down, the more risk you have. There's no gap. Look, there's a chance that at 12, the Giants could get the next Odell Beckham Jr. But what if they get the next, guy that doesn't pan out? Who knows? I'll have to go back and look at the 12 picks. But the point is there's a chance you get a player that's not going to be productive there. And case in point, the Browns under Sashi Brown were lauded. And I thought they did smart things, too, to trade back and acquire picks. They have selected something like 20 players in the last two drafts. None of them are any good.
Well, and that's the point.
I mean, it's great that you have all these picks, but if you don't pick the right guy, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
I'm with you. That's why, I mean, I know people are speculating, oh, Cleveland, should continue to capitalize and, move down from four or move up. People are saying that they should trade with the Giants to move up to 1-2, which I don't understand.
No,
but
no.
Here's the thing. The Browns are at the point where you have to start utilizing your high picks and translating that into talent.
They need players.
Yes, you can't keep moving. Every
right.
year it's let's move right. down, collect five other picks. You got 1-4 overall. John Dorsey, use the picks, bring in players, and see what you get that way.
And I think based on what they did in free agency, by using their salary cap to acquire good players in trades.
Yes, using chips in the draft to turn that into proven commodities.
Probably tells me that they're going to try to look for good players in the draft as well. They're tired of the slow build thing. They're going to try to make a bit of a splash.
Which I like because here's the thing. If you take a fourth rounder, John, what's the likelihood that turns into Jarvis Landry? That's a good trade. The percentage points are in your favor by getting the established commodity.
Now,
I like that move.
The other part of that is the resources you have to give out of your salary cap if you want to maintain him long term. But right now he's only on a 1-year franchise tag.
Correct.
They have not extended him, so then they'll make a decision on him after the year.
And they also have the financial flexibility to take on a guy like that.
Which is why they're uniquely positioned to make a move like that.
Indeed.
Correct. And I agree with the general statement. I wouldn't spend number one wide receiver money on a slot guy, and I understand the people that say that. But I think for a 1-year deal, they didn't trade a lot for him. I think it does make a certain amount of sense. All right, let's go to Steve in Atlanta. He's been holding the longest. Hey, Steve, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing great.
Hey, just a point on that trade between the Rams and the Washington. I think they just moved from 2 to 6, if I'm not mistaken. Right?
I think the Redskins moved from 6 to 2. I think that does sound correct, yes.
Yeah. So they didn't move that far, and they got a boatload of picks.
Correct. That was a very aggressive move by the Washington Redskins.
Yes.
I'll put it that way.
And then remember, in that draft, they also took Kirk Cousins in the third round, and
correct.
He turned out to be the guy, at least in the short.
And that was basically the only pick they had left.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know that Kirk Cousins, like I was scratching my head, but I think, John, I think you had a point. I listened to it on Friday, and I agree with you 100% that we don't know that we have a franchise quarterback. And we don't know what he's going to do with 2 minutes left in the game, or they're blitzing, or, it's a championship and the pressure's on. We really don't know.
No, it's Steve. And by the way, you also don't know if one of the guys in the draft is that guy. So you want to maximize the probability that you have him.
Right. And see, this is the dilemma you have, right? And that was the case of Washington. They drafted up, gave all those draft picks, but they still didn't know they had their quarterback, and yet they picked another quarterback. And I think if you don't know you have a franchise quarterback, you got to keep going until you know you have one.
Bingo.
Right?
I think you make a great point, Steve.
I mean, you certainly shouldn't sacrifice resources if you're unsure of whether or not the guy's a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's why I think they may just keep that pick and pick a quarterback. I don't know, But again, it's I really don't know what I would do in this situation.
It's tough.
I always wanted to be a GM, but I have no idea what I would do. But I'm going to throw out a crazy trade because somebody brought it up. I'm saying, well, it's a crazy trade, but probably has zero chance of happening. But we have Odell. And Cleveland has all this cap space. If you moved Odell to Cleveland, take maybe the fourth overall pick, maybe 2 seconds or something like that. Now, on paper, I wouldn't do it, right? Odell is a fantastic player, changes the game, right? But now, taking all consideration of all the other things, do we have the cap room to eventually sign him? How about the off-field stuff and all that stuff? I mean, I think Cleveland would be like, wow, I get a quarterback, I get Odell, I'm going to be scoring like...
Well, Steve, hold on. Let me just cut you off. Why would Cleveland make that deal if you have Corey Coleman, Josh Gordon, and Jarvis Landry?
Oh, Odell is, come on, Odell.
I think they would jump on it. Mean, I got three receivers that I think I could be productive with. Why am I wasting resources on another wide receiver?
But
I
Steve,
mean, to me,
maybe,
Steve,
but
Steve, bottom line, is Steve,
I mean,
Steve.
I mean, maybe, but I'm thinking that Odell wants to play with Landry. They love each other, right? They'll deal with it, you know, they just want to win. They don't really care, you know, the off-field stuff. And you're right. Well,
pardon
maybe
me?
Wouldn't.
Pardon
maybe
me?
They wouldn't. I don't know.
Wait. I think Odell Beckham would think twice about making permanent residence in Cleveland. I think I think that would be a factor in his decision. Let me put it that way, Steve.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. But he does want to play with Landry.
Well, they're friends and they're teammates at LSU.
Think of that situation. I like I said, 1% chance of happening, maybe none. But now we got the second and the fourth, right? Now you know you're going to get Barkley with the fourth. The second, you could take your franchise quarterback, or if you don't, you know, you're in the same situation. Or you could trade it to Buffalo, get a boatload of picks.
Steve,
I don't know.
Steve, I applaud your creativity. I really do. But honestly, I don't even think Cleveland would offer the fourth overall pick for a guy that you're going to have to pay that much money in a couple years, plus is coming off an ankle injury that cost them all of last year. If I were the Browns, especially after I already traded some draft capital to pay another wide receiver $16 million, if I was Cleveland, I would not make that offer were them.
Well, and that's why I said I wouldn't make that deal either. Right. I'd give up a fourth and a seventh for Jarvis Landry knowing he's just on a one-year deal, then give up my first-round pick for a wide receiver
that's
got 1 year left on his contract. Correct. And I'm not guaranteed to re-sign him.
That's fair. I agree. I agree with you. I was just wondering, but yeah, I mean, you're right. I think you got good points. Hey, one more thing. I think personally, I mean, the Jets are going to pick a quarterback, and the other thing is my thought from the beginning was the first four players picked in this draft were going to be quarterbacks.
Hey, they could be.
You know, and I think one way or the other, I think the Giants are going to pick one, or they're going to trade to, you know, I mean, I think, look at what Indianapolis did. They said they were like, if I'm not picking a quarterback, I'm trading out.
Steve,
They could have had Barkley. They didn't know. Yeah. They could have had Barkley. They could have sat there. The Giants could have taken their quarterback, first two quarterbacks, and they could have had Barkley. But they already bailed out.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate the call, my friend.
All right.
I would say this. I think four out of the top five will be quarterbacks. If it's four out of the top four, that means the Browns will have to have traded out, or the Giants and the Browns will have to trade out.
Yeah, because Cleveland's not taking two quarterbacks.
I think it's fairly safe. I'm not saying it's safe to say. I think it's realistic if four of the top five ended up being quarterbacks. That would not shock me.
Well, because you can make the argument that there's a need there,
of course,
potentially, for all those teams.
Right.
I mean, that's the rationale behind that. But once again, I still feel we're going to have a curveball.
And I think Lamar Jackson or Mason Rudolph or maybe even Luke Falk is going to go a lot higher than people think.
But are we talking about late first round, or are you saying second round?
I could say if the Bills or the Cardinals don't figure out a way to trade up,
Lamar Jackson
at 15, Mason Rudolph at 15, or Lamar Jackson at 12, not shock me. Not
interesting.
Shock me.
See, I would wonder if you're Buffalo.
Or maybe 22 for one of those guys if you're Buffalo with your second first-round pick.
Which, from a value standpoint, I don't think you could go wrong
with that.
It's just, you know, it's interesting because Buffalo just traded away Tyrod Taylor, who is that mobile quarterback. Would they want to go in a similar direction?
Well, you go Mason Rudolph then.
No, Mason Rudolph would make sense. But I'm talking about Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. Do you want to go with a similar style quarterback? Now, maybe they feel he's got more upside than Tyrod Taylor. It's possible. I would just think if you're Buffalo, now you're looking for maybe the polished pocket passer.
Especially given how they kind of wanted to put Nate Peterman in there last year, and he's more of the pocket guy. I think you're probably right. I agree. So maybe then Lamar Jackson 15 to Arizona, and then maybe Mason Rudolph 22 to Buffalo, or does Buffalo use one of their high second-round picks and hope that he's there?
Yeah.
Very interesting things that you can kind of take a look
at here.
And
it's also interesting because notice how you don't hear much about Rudolph.
Now, part of it was
because of the injury and not taking part in the Senior Bowl, but it's very quiet on that front. Nobody's bringing him up.
Well, he's in that second or third group, and they don't get as much attention.
But
much have you heard about the second group of running backs? Was it Barkley? They cast such a big shadow that people like to get in love with the top guys.
Well,
I
agree with you there, John, but I feel like we did see a lot of their measurements
at the
combine.
We heard
about how impressive some of these running backs. I mean, with Rudolph, it's almost like
he's invisible.
You forget he even played college football this past season. I mean, seriously.
No, that's fair. I won't argue with that. Let's go to Christian in New York. He's up next. Hi, Christian. How are you, buddy? Thanks for joining the show.
How are we doing, Chris?
Hey, guys.
Yes.
Well, first of all, thanks for calming my worries about potentially not wanting to trade down in the draft, because as soon as I saw a deal with the Colts done, I figured they had to have called the Giants because, you know, if they're going up for a quarterback, you might as well move a little bit higher and get closer to the one you really prefer.
They could have, but, Christian. I have no idea if they did or not. But again, I think for me at least, I think it would be too early to make that type of call if you're the Giants and you don't know what you think about these four quarterbacks yet.
Yeah, I was definitely worried about it because I do prefer to trade down. But I'm really happy about Nate Solder, and I like the way the team approached Eric Flowers about it, just really up front.
Yep.
And but honestly, I think if he has any chance of moving positions, it's definitely left guard, because he's been trying to really master becoming a left tackle for probably like 15 years of his life and hasn't done that. So for him to just go switching his stance like that and say, hey, try something completely new now. I mean, I know he did it a little bit in college.
Yeah, he started off as a true freshman as a right tackle. I mean, you're now asking him to convert to a position he's never played. Christian, I mean, once again, I understand he's been at left tackle for the last few seasons, but there's at least some familiarity with the right tackle position, even though, yes, the footwork is a little bit different. You're now saying that he's better suited for a position he never had a taste of, not even going back to college.
You know what? And Lance, I understand your point. I think I'm with Christian on this. I think not because the footwork change is a smaller change than the position change, I just think it's easier for a player, frankly, to play guard than it is to play tackle. And that's why I think guard is the safer landing spot. I would certainly put him at a right tackle first and see how he does. But I think, mostly because you don't have any other really tackles that have a lot of experience on the roster.
On the roster, yeah.
While at guard, you do. But I think left guard would be a very, very good backup slide in the spot if right tackle doesn't work out.
Well, that would make sense as plan B. I mean, in my head, and once again, we're speculating because we don't even know what the offensive line is going to look like, but if you figure at this point...
Though Dave Gettleman did say he would have a chance to compete at right tackle. That was something...
Correct. That was at least the statement that we could run with after Pat Shurmur had the conversation with it. And I like the fact that the organization not only, you know, was up front with him, but also put that in the press release so that the fans now completely understand way before the draft is even here.
Isn't it refreshing?
I know, it is refreshing. So that is something. I mean, we don't have to play the game of speculation. We at least know he's going to compete at right tackle. And we'll let you continue, Christian. I'm sorry we're going off on a tangent here. But I guess what I'm saying, if I'm just looking at the line right now, John, I would assume, this is just my opinion, that Omame is at least going to get the first opportunity at left guard.
I agree.
Next to Solder.
I agree.
So that means that you can prepare Flowers at left guard, but I don't know if necessarily he's going to be choice number one at that spot.
I think the plan out the gate, Christian, would be for Flowers to compete at right tackle and ideally win that job.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it does happen.
Now we'll see if he can do it. Who knows?
I would just like to see him get off of having to protect the edge, because he even did really seem to line up a little wider next to Justin Pugh than the right tackle did.
Yes, he did.
To John Jerry. And, you know, so it just kind of seems like that might not be his game. And you get so much help as an interior lineman with the center, like, a lot of the time. And sometimes you're not even blocking anybody. And so
you're right.
You might just have to take a little bit of responsibility off of his hands and let him be in a familiar situation over there on that left side. I would really like to see them draft Mike McGlinchey and just try to go after their next right tackle, and probably in a safer way than hoping Eric Flowers will pan out there.
Well, where are you drafting McGlinchey, though?
Yes. Good question, Lance.
Where are you drafting him?
You beat me to it.
Well, I would like them to trade with the Bills and take McGlinchey at 12, and then, since I'm an LSU fan, get Darius Geis at 21.
Okay.
I would love that.
You mean 22?
Oh, 22, yeah.
And that's fine. I honestly think Geis will be there at 22.
I think Geis may be in the second round, though. Really? You think he's going to sneak into the first?
I think one or two running backs will sneak into the back half of the first.
That'll be interesting.
I could be wrong, though. Maybe not.
No. Listen, you're not wrong. It's your opinion. I just, from what I've been hearing, I thought maybe that you could settle for the second round and still grab him.
I think there's a group of four guys and two of them will be there at the top of the second round. I think your second group of running backs right now are probably Ronald Jones, Darius Geis, Sony Michel, and then Chubb, I think, maybe in that group.
Yeah,
I would say.
It's possible.
So, and I think two out of those four would be available at the top of the second round. Maybe three. But I think one other running back will definitely go at some point in the first round, in my opinion. I think they're good enough players.
Well, but to Christian's point, I do think they're good players. I just don't know if you're maximizing your value with your other first-round pick at running back. Now, granted, I know we're making the argument for Barkley, but Barkley, to me, is a unique player.
And I agree with that.
So I understand where you're going with McGlinchey if you trade down, Christian. I just think you could do better value than just a running back with your other pick.
Yeah, Christian, I actually agree with Lance, even though I'm not sure Geis specifically will be there at the top of the second round. I think there will be a good enough running back there at the top of the second round to give you
that
some
you
better value. I agree with you on
position.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think maybe just being an LSU fan,
understandable.
You know, maybe I'm just jumping on the bandwagon for him a little bit, but maybe with our second round pick, that would probably be a little more honest.
I think that's reasonable. Thank you, Christian.
Thanks for the phone call.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate the call, buddy. And Dottino threw out that McGlinchey at 12. Last week with the Bills. I think my guess, if I know Paul Dottino, he sold himself over the weekend on that trade. Let's go to Jay in Brooklyn. He's up next.
He sold himself on a lot of things over the weekend.
Hey, how you guys doing, man?
Well, great, Jay. What's up, pal?
All right, real quick.
You're okay. You got time.
This trade clarifies at least one thing on this, is the value that it's going to take to move up a couple of spots in the draft. Do you agree?
Yes, I think to a certain extent, but I think
to a certain extent, I
think
right.
The closer you get to the draft and you know who's going to be there, if it's the right guy, I think you might be able to even get a little bit more maybe than what the Colts got from the Jets, because there's more certainty of who you're going to get at two as compared to who you're going to get at three.
And if you're the Giants, you have more leverage, because if that team is desperate to move up to two and
only
they're on
guy.
The clock, then
That's
you're
it.
Like, all right, well, give me an extra first-round pick. Right now, the Colts and the Jets were operating with plenty of flexibility and time.
Correct.
That's what's going to build into my next point. I think, just as you said, John, you've been saying it for months, and I agree with you, take the quarterback. Or trade the pick.
I'm with you.
The thing that this trade does is it just shows you how much value the Giants have. And just as silly as it would be for Mike Maccagnan to trade three number twos to not take a quarterback, I think it would be just as silly to stay at number two and take a running back with the offers that you know you're going to have out there.
And it was Jay to me, and honestly, I've been asked this question before, if I'm not picking a quarterback and I'm not trading back and I have to take a player or two, I'm not sure which guy I like the best between Chubb, Nelson, and Barkley. I'm honestly not sure who I would take. But I know I can get one of those guys at five, so why not trade down?
Yeah, I agree. And even with – listen, I don't want to trade down with Buffalo.
Right.
But I'm telling you right now, you could definitely get their 2-1s and 2-2s right now from them if they wanted to move up to number two. You probably could. I mean, it's a stretch, but I think you could.
Jay, I think they would prefer to probably trade a two next year, so they have a second-round pick this year. But I think you could get 2-1s and 2-2s, even if they're not both in this year's draft. Yeah, you could probably get one of their threes from this year's draft as well, I think.
So let's go with that theory. That means the Giants, if they don't take a quarterback, think that a guard, a defensive end, or a running back are worth 4 to 5 of the best 50 college players in the draft. That's
which I think is crazy.
Anyway, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Hey, Jay, I think you made a great argument for why you would consider trading down. I think that's the best argument to make for why you would want to trade down.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you go in the order of the picks, yes, it's the top 50, four of the top 50, but that doesn't mean that they're going to pan out to be four of the top 50. See, that's the caveat that I think needs to be thrown out. You're just going by the order of the numbers in the draft. But if we went back 4 or 5 years ago and redid a draft and you did the top 50, were those the top 50 players in order of the draft?
No, it never is.
So, you know, you have to take that into consideration. I think it's more of going back to Gettleman's quote at the Combine. If he believes number two, Chubb, Nelson, or Barkley is Hall of Famer, then my argument would be I would take the Hall of Famer over the chance to pick four of the top 50 out of the 50 selections.
Or maybe
that would be my response to that.
Or the argument could be made then, if he has those three players or two of those three players graded extremely similarly, and I think there's a better argument to be made for that than there is for thinking all the quarterbacks are equal, because I think that's very much a beauty is in the eye of the beholder type
subjective
of situation,
to,
a quarterback.
Yeah.
But I think it's very realistic to think that, oh, you know, Barkley and Nelson, we have grades that are within the tenth of a point of each other. We know one of them is going to be there at five. If we trade out of the two hole, you're getting one of them anyway. Well, so why not get the extra picks?
And that's assuming that the five is on the table. If it's the Buffalo offer,
different conversation.
That's changing the dynamics.
Different conversation.
Yeah, the Buffalo, I'm not as urgent to make that deal. The number five pick with the Broncos, I understand where you're coming from, that you think in all likelihood you're going to get one of those three, so perhaps gain value on top of getting one of the guys you're very high on. That's a win-win under that circumstance.
Which is, yeah, right.
The Buffalo trade, though, is not a win-win.
That's a much different situation.
That's rolling the dice. That's what the Buffalo trade
is. It's a much bigger risk.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. I think we're very much on the same page with that. Bob in Sacramento will wrap us up. He's always out on the West Coast. What's up, Bob? Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Hey,
good morning.
Listen.
Good morning to you.
You know, it's not very often you get the number two pick.
Yep.
So I agree. One of you guys said the Rams, with that trade, hardly any of those guys are there anymore. Plus, you have salary cap constraints when you draft quantity over quality. So I would keep the two. I would never do the Buffalo. I would never trade it with Buffalo. And I would take the guy I want at number two, and hopefully that you're never at number two again. And I would take that. And I don't think they're going to trade down. I really don't. That's my opinion. What do you think?
I agree with you 100%. I mean, that was the point of me bringing up the Rams and the Redskins trade earlier that you alluded to.
Okay, with you,
I mean,
I was kind of working and listening. So, yeah, I mean, you got to go with the quality here. You got to go with the quality.
Yeah, but
the
Bob,
quantity,
here's
like you said, it's a crapshoot.
But Bob, here's my argument.
That's I'm hoping they do, and I hope they take Barkley.
See,
that's where I'm
Bob,
at.
Here's my argument though. What if you can get your quality and get your quantity by going down and trading with the Broncos at five? What if you can get both?
You know, that would be, I guess, the only scenario that I would accept. But then you got to wonder how many number two, how many second rounders are they going to offer with that? So they got to sweeten the pot with high level draft picks in that second round, don't they?
I would think. Remember, the Bills have two first round picks, so you would get their two first round picks at 12 and 22. So that's already better than anything that the Jets gave to the Colts, because you're getting two first round picks. You would get one of their second round picks this year. Probably, you know, you would negotiate that. You'd get one of their third round picks this year. And then I would try for another pick in next year's draft, maybe another second-round pick in next year's draft.
Well, that's the Buffalo trade, though. I think,
so, yeah, the Buffalo
but
trade.
I think, Bob, you were referring to the Broncos
too far
trade.
Down. They're at 12,
yeah,
you said, right?
He's not,
the Broncos.
He means the Broncos trade, meaning he
I'm
means
sorry.
If you go from 2 to 5, what potentially
yeah,
would
good.
Denver
no,
have to
good.
Offer?
No, I might buy that.
And we're all on the same
that.
Page
Who
there.
Who would you get at 5?
Well,
Who do you think would be at 5?
I think you would have one of... Choice. You would have a choice of one of these three players, maybe two of these three players. Saquon Barkley, Bradley Chubb, and Quentin Nelson. You would get one of those three guys.
Oh, I don't know if Barkley makes it to five.
No, I'm saying,
I'm not saying
you're not going to have your choice of any of the three, but you'll get one of the three.
See, Bob wants Barkley. Bob
yeah,
wants Barkley,
right.
So I think
well,
anything that doesn't
I,
present
I
Barkley, he's not going to be a fan.
Better than Jerry Reese did. That's all I can tell you. So,
thank you, Bob.
Confident. I'm confident in Gettleman.
Thank you, Bob.
Appreciate the phone call.
Sorry about that, Bob. I thought you were done. You know, but I think you actually asked a very good follow-up question. What would you get from the Broncos? For then to move from 5 to 2.
Well, so that's a difference of 3 spots. The
Which is the same for Jets and Colts.
Well, I'm just using that as a comparison sake. Yep. So if you're Dave Gettleman, my point is just like contracts are based on the player that just received the contract at that position, John, and an agent is representing a center, they're going to show you the contract that the previous center on the market
got.
So if you're Gettleman, when you start the conversations with the Broncos, you go, okay, well, the Jets and the Colts made a deal about a month ago.
So the conversation starts with 3 second round
I think that's where the conversation has to start.
And I would think then Dave Gettleman said, well, that's what they got for the third pick, where there's a lot of unknown of who's going to be there. Our pick's more valuable, so you're going to have to give us a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I think the conversation starts, and you say, all right, the Broncos, we want your 40th overall pick, which is their second-round pick, and we want your first-round pick in next year's draft.
I think that's fair.
Where it starts.
Now, they don't have 2 second-rounders like the Jets did.
And that's why it gets a little tricky.
So you have to find a way to balance that out.
So I think you asked for their 2 this year, their 1 next year. I'm not sure you're going to get their third-round pick out of him this year. I think you ask for it. I'm not sure you're going to get it. Maybe you get their 3rd and you have to give them back your 4th. and you do like a swap or something like that.
That's possible.
Denver does have a compensatory pick at the end of the third round.
Right, so then maybe they'd be willing to give up one of their
Maybe they give up their later third round pick. You get their second round pick this year,
their later third round pick, and then a first rounder from the next year.
I think that's a fair trade.
I think that is a fair trade. And that's where I think you have to start with the negotiation. Because it's a little different. Denver, unlike the Jets, does not have 2 second rounders. So you have to make up for that other second rounder that the Colts are getting in this year alone, which means you got to talk about a third rounder. And you also, to me, the icing on the cake is the first rounder the next year. That has to be included.
Yeah, because that has probably a little bit more value than a second round pick in this year's draft. So you balance it out that way, but then you are only getting a third instead of a second this year, and that kind of makes the offers a little bit more copacetic.
Equivalent to what that other second-round pick would be that the Colts
Yeah, have. I think that's fair. I think you go for their compensatory third-round pick, their second-round pick, swap ones, and then your first-round pick next year. Yeah, I would take that trade in a second.
Especially
based on
what Cleveland took with the number one overall pick, too. Knowing that makes you even more comfortable, perhaps moving down to five as well.
Correct. And again, I would not make any trade unless I knew Cleveland took one. Assuming, again, I guess if you don't love one of the quarterbacks and you don't believe in any of them, maybe it doesn't matter as much who the Browns pick at one, because they're either going to pick that player at one or four. It doesn't really make a difference. Or ahead of you twice. So I think if you know you're not picking a quarterback, Lance, I think going down to five early is okay. But if there's this one QB that you know you love, and if he's there, you're picking him, then I think you got to wait.
Well, and here's the other side of things. You know, we were talking about the relationship that Gettleman has with Brandon Bean because they worked together in Carolina. And, you know, I mean, Gettleman, I'm sure, obviously knows John Elway because he was in the Broncos organization too. There's nothing wrong with having preliminary conversations and going to the two of them. Hey, we'll consider this, but we're just going to wait to see what Cleveland does at one. And then when we're on the clock, you know, we can then hammer out this deal.
Oh, no, I'm happy you brought that up. That's exactly what's going to happen. They're going to have, from preliminary talks, trades on the table from probably three or four different teams, and then when they see who gets picked first, they'll give a call to that team and say, all right, let's
move forward.
Exactly.
Yeah, because here's the thing. The Giants, because maybe people would counter, well, then those other teams are going to look to go elsewhere. Well, where else are they going to go? The Giants have the leverage.
They hold all the cards.
Like, John Elway can't go to another team and be like, well, how do I move past the Giants? There is no option. Cleveland's not giving up the pick. So meaning patience is actually an asset right now for the Giants. They don't need to be in a
The
rush.
Only other place they can move is four, but that still doesn't get you ahead of the Jets or the Giants, so it doesn't help
you. Correct. And if you're Buffalo at 12, even if you want to inch up closer, if you're Brandon Bean, option B could be maybe you move up to 8 or maybe you move up to 7 and you could wait a little bit to do that.
But I think
if you wanted to do that.
You have to wait to see if one of the quarterbacks
drops. Yeah, you've got to wait to see if anybody drops.
Correct.
But the point is that by the time we get to the 8th pick and it takes 17 hours to get through the next four picks, Brandon Bean's going to have enough time to pick up the phone and make another deal.
Guys, great show. We had a lot of fun. Tomorrow it's Lancelot and Dottino. They'll be with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live, and then we'll continue covering the draft and free agency the rest of the week on Giants.com. Make sure you stay tuned and place your votes. Round 2 of the Big Blue Bracket Challenge is wrapping up today, and we'll have our final 4 players remaining in the bracket. So make sure you vote today. There's 4 competitions going on with 8 players/groups available to choose from. So for Lance Menno, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Everybody have a great day.
Have a good one.